Canada, as we mentioned, beating Brazil 85-77. Kelly Olynyk leading the way for Canada, 20 points, 18 boards. Corey Joseph at 16 and 10. Tristan Thompson at 12 boards as well. And Tristan Thompson making an impact, certainly, on that game. Let's bring in Eric Smith. He's our Raptors play-by-play voice on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. We talked a little bit yesterday about this with Doug Smith about this whole process of qualifying and how it sort of seems, Eric, to have been borrowed from FIFA, from soccer. This was, though, when you're looking at three games on the road in which you're probably not going to have NBA players, and one of those games in Venezuela, and given what's going on there, I have no idea how you play a game in Venezuela right now, given the political crisis in that country. But man, this was important to win this game, wasn't it? Whatever the score, it was important to win this game.
Yeah, it absolutely was. And you're right, Jeff. The odds of Team Canada having any NBA players for these next few games is pretty much slim to none. I can all but guarantee you that when the roster is officially announced either today or tomorrow, there's going to be no Tristan Thompson, Corey Joseph, Kelly Olynyk. None of those guys.
Justin Jackson, Kim Birch.
None of those guys. None of those guys. Actually, yeah. And Pangos as well. My understanding is he won't be going to Chile either. So at least five, if not six, of the players that were in last night's game and on last night's roster will not be a part of the team going to Chile that plays in just a few days on September 17th, let alone then as you talk about those other games that are coming up late November and into December. And Canada's already played seven games in this, as you stated, and I wholeheartedly agree, this ridiculous, convoluted qualifying setup. They've already played seven games. They've only had NBA players for three of those seven games, and that were the three games that were on home soil this summer in Toronto, Ottawa, and then this one last night in Laval. So that bodes well to some extent that they've been able to still get three victories in those other four games without the NBA guys, but it's now putting a lot of pressure, or at least a lot of focus and spotlight on the non-NBA, the non-EuroLeague players to make sure that they get it done, because the next qualifying games are going to feature nobody from the NBA. After that November-December window I talk about, there will be two games back in Canada at yet-to-be-determined sites in February, but that's right in the middle of the NBA season, right in the middle of EuroLeague. There's going to be no pros in those games either, so it really puts the onus on Canada and a lot of countries to get it done without their truly best players.
So what do you, as we look at this right now, what would be your best guess as to a starting five without NBA players?
Man, without NBA players.
Without those six. A starting five, let's say, in Chile.
Well, listen, I'm almost positive that Aaron Best is going to go, and he played great minutes for Canada last night. So Aaron Best is certainly going to be there. I believe that Melvin Edgem is going to make the trip, and he's a guy that I think should be playing in the NBA, but he's not, so he'll be down there. So those two for sure be in the starting five. You might be leaning on a veteran guy like Joel Anthony, former NBA player who was, if you want to call it cut, or at least not brought on the roster for last night's game, but I think that was given the fact that he was going to be heading to Chile and sort of, give him that bit of a break, even though he's a Quebecer, and I'm sure it would have been fun to play in front of the crowd in Montreal. I think that Dwayne Notis, if folks remember that name from his run a couple of years ago with the Gamecocks in the NCAA tournament, I think that he's probably got a shot at cracking through. And quite honestly, after that, your guess might be as good as mine in terms of who the Canadians might lean on after that to kind of fill out that starting five. And that's going to be the challenge. Brady Heslop might have a chance to slide in there if you're looking at having him run the point in the backcourt, because, Best, you're probably going to have playing off the ball. So that would kind of be my best guess right now in terms of that five. But as I say, it really puts a lot of pressure on the depth overall of the roster. And a lot of the guys talked about it yesterday, Jeff, that there's, at least 30, if not 35 guys that are sort of in the pool of players right now for Team Canada. And that's not even including guys, perhaps, that have yet to suit up for various reasons, whether it be personal or injury or contractually related, as you kind of eye the possibility of playing at the Worlds and possibly at the Olympics in a couple of years. Because, then you start thinking about guys like you know, Tyler Ennis and certainly Andrew Wiggins and Jamal Murray and you know, the list goes on of the options that are available for Canada. But, you know, is it all going to work out? You know, first, obviously, you got to qualify, but then are you going to be able to get everybody on that same page? And then you got to also kind of pay the respect to the guys that have, you know, gotten you to that point. And how do you pick and choose and just say, no, we're only taking the 12 NBA players of the 14 NBAers that we have. And not look at the contributions that have been made by a guy like Heslop or Pangos or Best or Edgem, and the list goes on. It's going to be a challenge, I think, as you kind of eye the world next year.
What explains? You know, we see this happen in soccer overseas a lot. There are players who are different players when they put their national team jersey on than when they play for their club team. It can be good, it can be bad. Sometimes it has to do with change of position, change of responsibility, all that good stuff. But Kelly Olynyk, you know, Kelly Olynyk's not a bad NBA player, don't get me wrong. But you stick a Canada jersey on him, Eric, and something happens.
Yeah, and he talked a little bit about it last night, and he kind of, he flashed that big smile of his and just sort of shook his head and laughed. And he said he had an explanation for it. He said, you know, I have a lot of pride playing for my country. It means a lot for me to put on that maple leaf and to put on the jersey. But he said, in terms of the transformation, I think the reporter that asked him the question is, you know, he's almost become like Captain Canada in a sense. He is a completely different player. And the only thing I could say, Jeff, is it might lean to, and I think we're seeing the change certainly in the NBA the last few years, is just the overall tempo and the flow of the international game and the ability for a big man like Olynyk, who has the ball handling skills. Heck, even Kevin Pangos was joking, alongside Olynyk at the podium yesterday in talking at the postgame press conference. He said, I think Kelly brought the ball up the floor more than I did last night, and I'm the point guard. You know, the fact that he's got that handle, the fact that he's the ability to distribute, he's got the outside range, he can rebound down low. And I think that's something that we're seeing more and more in the NBA, too, just the athleticism of the big man. And it might be something that you see evolve with Olynyk even more with the Miami Heat. In terms of him being that much more involved, because, you know, we're not seeing the traditional bigs have the impact that they once did. And I think, you know, when you look at a guy like Olynyk when he was in Boston, he certainly had a very solid role. He might not be putting up 20 and 15 every night, but he had a solid role within that rotation. But then ultimately wasn't brought back by the Celtics. And I think he's one of the main cogs with the Heat now. So, I think that I'm, you know, we're probably not going to watch him turn into an NBA All-Star, but I think he's a very good NBA player. That flourishes in this type of format and style in the international game. And I think the other thing, too, for bigs, not to imply that all bigs don't have the same fitness level or whatnot of smaller players, but I think playing the shorter games and shorter spurts in a 40-minute game as opposed to a 48-minute game can sometimes lead to better results and better fitness overall for bigs especially, but for that matter, for all players.
You know, Grange made this point on social media last night during the game about Melvin Ejim, and you talked about it as well, how you would think he's certainly good enough to have a spot in an NBA roster. His defensive abilities and his awareness of the game really set him apart from a lot of other players, don't they? He seems to be that prototypical guy who's a step or half a step ahead of a lot of his opponents. Now, granted, that's Brazil. I mean, you know, I understand he's not playing an NBA team, but he seems to be able to, I don't know what the word is. He seems to be able to sense a little bit about what the other team is going to do.
Yeah, I think it's the instincts probably. I'm shocked that he's not in the NBA because a couple of years ago, I think he had a tryout. And was welcomed to camp by the Orlando Magic. And I believe that's when Scott Skiles was coaching down there. And to me, he seemed like a perfect fit for Skiles, like a type of guy that Skiles would love. And he was one of the last cuts. And I think the only thing that may be biting him right now, and it's one of those, he just needs someone to give him that chance. Cause I think it's the, maybe the tag or the moniker that's been put on him is, I don't think it's fair, is that he's perhaps maybe not athletic enough to keep up with some of the threes, but yet not big enough or strong enough, as big and strong as he is, to
kind
keep
of a
up
tweener.
To handle some of the fours. But then you watch, and as you just said, and I agree with you, okay, we're talking international ball, we're not talking the NBA, but you see him guarding fours, you see him guarding fives, you see him going up against guys that are 4, 5, 6 inches taller than him or 20, 30, 40 pounds heavier than him, and he's still holding his own, and he's still, you know, performing quite well. So I think he's just one of those guys that needs that opportunity. And Grange and I were actually talking about him yesterday. It might have been right when Grange sent it out, as you said, on social media. We started having this conversation, and I said, I drew the comparison to a guy like P.J. Tucker. Now, Tucker is a lot thicker, a lot stronger than Edgem, and that's not a knock on Edgem. but it's that similar type build, 6'5", 6'6", more stocky, more strong, and just using your smarts, using your instincts to kind of get that extra, you know, that extra inch or two can make a difference. If you're even just just the way that you're guarding somebody, the way that you're positioning your hands, the way that you're holding your body, the angle that you're cutting off, those minute little differences that can truly make that difference when guarding somebody, you know, that separates the good from the bad, and certainly the good from even the elite. And I think Edgem's got that edge on a lot of guys when it comes to his defensive skills. And he can certainly run the floor and finish above the rim too with the hands on the offensive end. He's not going to be a guy you're spotting up to shoot a lot, but, you know, if he's got his hands ready and he's around the rim, point guard's going to find him and he can finish in traffic.
How disappointed was that turnout last night? Or how disappointing, I should say.
I think it was very disappointing. Now, I will say to anybody that's listening in Laval or Montreal and the surrounding areas, for as much as me and many others might have bragged on the crowd leading up to it, it was still the best crowd that Canada produced over the course of the summer, because it was a higher attendance than it was in Toronto back in late June, and it was certainly better than my apologies, the awful crowd and the awful atmosphere that was in Ottawa. And I don't really understand why. I don't know that the tickets were overly expensive. My understanding is they started around $30 and topped out, I'm not talking courtside seats here, but it topped out at around $95, so everything under $100. Some people have hit me up on social media saying, you know, well, once Canada produces the best team and the best players come out, then I'll support. Well, you know, you've still got four or five NBA players, and okay, yeah, you didn't have Jamal Murray and Andrew Wiggins, but Canada had more NBA players playing for their country than almost every country in these qualifiers to this point. And I don't know if that's an excuse when you also factor in our colleague, and many people might know, Laura Ewing from Canadian Press. She said, hey, I was just in Ottawa, about a month or so ago for a women's soccer match that was a friendly, I believe it was against Germany, an international friendly that meant absolutely nothing, and it drew 20,000 people. So you tell me that for a World Cup qualifier that actually means something with NBA players on the floor in a venue that only seats 10,000 people anyways, you can't draw more than 4,100 people? Or for the crowd that was under 5,000 in Toronto as well at Rico or now Coca-Cola Coliseum? I mean, I don't understand it. I can't figure it out. But then a lot of people will also point it back to our industry and say, well, hey, the games weren't even on either of the two major networks with all the channels available. You know, nobody was able to step up and broadcast the game either. So, you know, is it the chicken or egg theory in terms of the coverage, in terms of the advertisers, the dollars that are out there? And I think that's one of the challenges amongst many that Glenn Grunwald will have now in taking over as CEO for Canada Basketball. I think they need to find a way to bring in more sponsorship dollars, to bring in more money overall, and to secure some sort of broadcast deal for their games, and not just for the men, but for the women, and heck, for even the younger teams as well. I think that's going to be paramount for trying to build this team and build this program.
Yeah, and you know what I think is kind of at work here, I agree with you, and I think women's soccer in some ways is it had its moment in London, and you know it had its moment even in defeat to that U.S. team. And I think part of the issue for basketball, and it's not fair to the guys who were there, but you know, typically when you talk about the Canadian men's basketball team, and you don't get this in soccer, you used to get it for the Canadian men's soccer program, which in some ways has some issues similar to the Canadian national men's basketball team. But it seems as if our discussion is always who isn't there, because, you know, and that kind of concerns me a bit, because it's almost as if it reinforces the idea that basketball in Canada is essentially an NBA sport, right? It's people watch NBA basketball in Canada. They won't watch basketball in general in Canada. And I don't know how you get around that. The only thing I can suggest is you sort of need that transformative moment, right? Where Canada wins a bronze medal or a silver medal in this social media age, and people develop that awareness. But yeah, you're right. I mean, that to me, the Glenn Grunwald's biggest issue is, how do you convince people that the guys who are showing up, Tristan Thompson's a bona fide NBA player, he's got a ring. How do you get people to focus on the guys who show up, as opposed to the guys who don't show up? And I don't know how you do that.
I don't know that I have a great answer for you either. I agree with your assessment there in terms of, you know, talk about Tristan Thompson as a bona fide NBA player that we've seen in the finals for how many of the last X number of years playing with Cleveland and one of the main cogs with the Cavaliers, let alone Corey Joseph having played for the Raptors and having a solid career to this point. He's a champion as well with San Antonio. And Kelly Olynyk putting his jersey on for Canada time and time again, year after year. People might not know the name Justin Jackson yet or Ken Birch, but then, you know, that's five NBA players that I just mentioned right there. There's 14 in the league when we include the youngsters that were just drafted in this past draft. And with due respect to these players, I'm not sure that there's somebody at home saying quite yet, well, because, you know, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is not there, I'm not going to go to the game. You know, Jamal Murray's a talent that I think is absolutely going to be playing for Canada. He had an injury. Dylan Brooks was supposed to be here in Laval. My understanding is he got the flu, and simply just because of the flu, Memphis decided to not allow him to go to Canada to play for the Canadians in that game last night, let alone certainly not for the game in Chile. The one that certainly stands out bigger than anybody else is Andrew Wiggins, and there's long been rumblings about Andrew Wiggins and his, you know, beliefs or lack thereof, and Jay Triano in the Canadian program after he was subbed out for Aaron Dorningkamp for defensive reasons late in the game in 2015 in Mexico City in the FIBA Americas when Canada failed to qualify then. When you know, that's kind of haunted him or followed him the whole time.
Eric, I would say that might haunt the whole program because I think a lot of people look at the Canadian men's team and they say, you know, all we hear, all we read is how basketball in Canada is growing. We've got all these NBA players. And I think what happens sometimes is people watch games and they go, what the hell's going on? You're taking out an NBA player for some guy I've never heard of. This is a joke. And, you know, that's how people react.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, though. And I think you would probably agree with me, but, you know, you tell me if you don't. I get that. And I was in Mexico City and I was scratching my head a little bit, but I will say that nobody, and not to go back 3 years ago here, nobody not named Kelly Olynyk had a good game that day. Every single player on that team was completely awful. So on one hand, you can make the case and the argument that it made absolute sense to be pulling Andrew Wiggins out if he wasn't getting it done defensively, and especially in a key moment to put a better defensive player on the floor. But the flip side of that argument that I'm sure Wiggins looks at, it says, I'm one of the stars of the, you know, for our country. I'm an elite player in the NBA, and I'm being subbed out for a guy that plays overseas. And yeah, I love him as my teammate, but you're taking me out and you're singling me out when everybody else is struggling. Everybody not named Kelly Olynyk is having an equally awful game. So, you know, I can kind of see both sides of this. But I'll tell you the other thing, and I don't know that he even cares, but you know, if I were to look at this from Andrew Wiggins' perspective, you still have an opportunity to be a star, not only in the NBA, but a star for this country, to come and put the jersey on, to wave the flag, to be a part of something special potentially at the Worlds and maybe even at the Olympics if you're to make it that far. And if you miss this window in this alleged golden age for Canadian basketball, you're going to get passed over very quickly by RJ Barrett, because he may be the best talent that this country has ever produced. Now, that's saying a lot in terms of when you talk about a two-time MVP in Steve Nash. I'm not going to sit here and say that RJ Barrett's going to be a two-time MVP in the NBA, but I'm talking sheer athletic talent, at least in recent memory. You know, RJ Barrett's got a chance to be everything that Andrew Wiggins, you know, we thought would be and we hope could still be, not only for Canada, but in the NBA as well. And I think Barrett could easily be the poster boy for this team going forward. And Wiggins has that chance to still be the guy and to make this team, let alone his own individual career and accolades, that much better. And I you know, I think it'd be a shame if he's not a part of this going forward. And I think that's yet another thing to put on the list for Glenn Grunwald to tackle.